Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health here in Toronto. Cutting edge, state of the art, compassionate facility. Right now, it is Mental Health Awareness Week. This is the time when they need you most. This is the time when you can make a real difference when it comes to doing something about the mental health crisis and the devastating opioid epidemic, the overdose epidemic that we're currently experiencing, losing 20 people every day. They need your help. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand. To help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. So look, I've got like under a dozen really smart and talented people here, and all they want to do is make great podcasts for you, tell you great stories, and find things out, investigate things that nobody knows, and then tell you all about those things. Why wouldn't you support something like that for $5 a month? It is a no-brainer. Click on the link in your show notes, go to canadalandshow.com/join, and we will immediately install on your device in moments a golden premium ad-free feed of this podcast. Go do it. Paul Wells, senior writer at Maclean's, joining me from Ottawa. Welcome back.
Hi.
Paul, today we're going to talk about the mega-rich socialite who lured teenage girls to his tropical retreat and used his network of powerful connections to evade justice and media attention for years, all about the rape charges against him. Nope, not talking about that guy. I'm talking about his Canadian equivalent. And damn it, Paul, whether mainstream media types like you want to or not, we are going to talk about We Charity for once.
Well, thank God, because yes, we've been shunning that story.
Yeah, well, too bad for you. This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you all by Alex Donaldson, Spencer Winson, Adrian Wells, Matthew McKinnon, Emma Rogers, Dominic, Emily Ower, and Megan.
My name is Megan, and I work behind the scenes in Canada's theaters. I support Canada Land because of the clarity they provide in our murky media landscape. The current season of Commons is particularly important, and I applaud the whole team for continuing to shine light in Canada's dark corners.
Okay, let's talk about We.
Yay.
Paul Wells, I would like to begin by saying a few words in praise of the CBC.
Sure.
Why do you sound skeptical? No, Janice McGregor, who's been reporting this story out for the CBC, had a story that was filled with really big revelations, any one of which could have been kind of a sensational headline. The only thing I'll say negatively about this piece is whoever wrote the headline just knows how to downplay and bury some really big revelations. The headline is Charities Question Whether We Run Student Program Would Have Been Worth the Money. Did you read this article, Paul?
I did indeed, yeah. And it fills up a big part of the story, which is all of us, of course, have been treating We as essentially a political entity, but it is essentially a benevolent charity, or, you know, that's the flag it flies under. And there are people in that sector. And so this answers the question, what do they think of it?
Yeah, they don't like it, or at least a lot of them really don't like it. And
That was one of the main things, is when you get into the guts of this, as the CBC did, as to how, what this meant for charities. And they paint a picture of like, all of these charities are getting hit hard from the pandemic. You know, donations are drying up, live events, all the fundraising stuff, like it's really bad across the sector. And here comes we with almost $1 billion from the government, and they've got to spend it quickly, and they're looking for other charities to work with them. But here's what you got to do. In your moment of need, we says to you, sign right here. We'll pay you if you can like use your network to get us some volunteers. But here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to let us kind of like put our brand, our logo over your logo. You're going to have to go out there and spread the We logo to your people. You're going to have to go out and promote this program, which we kind of own this program. We get to promote this program using your brand. And there was a gag order. You're not allowed to say anything negative about this deal. And, you know, charities like anybody else, like the branding, the public relations, like this essentially, it reads like a major power grab whereby like we gets to colonize every other charity that has to play with them in this and sort of kiss the ring if they want in to these government funds.
Yeah, there's constant, fairly heavy-handed reputation management involved in anything that happens around We. And also constant secrecy. I mean, this goes back to the government saying that We had been chosen through an open and transparent process about which they would provide no details. We claiming in those full page ads at the beginning of the week that the public service has openly said that they had selected We. And yet no public servant has even been permitted to take questions on that matter.
Yeah.
It's the contrary of the truth that went out over the Kielbergers' names. And then this, yeah, you can help us meet our absurdly ambitious recruiting targets if you make it look like we've done all the work and you say nice things about us. Okay.
Yeah. That detail about like in their apology letter, like, you know, Mark and Craig Kielberger have yet to give an interview, answer any questions to media, but they bought space in newspapers with this full page ad. And in their like, you know, hey, let's set the record straight. There was a major factual error that you caught, Paul. And I missed it. I caught it when you wrote about this, that they claimed that the public service has actually spoken out and confirmed what the PMO has said. That has not happened yet. The CBC piece alerted my attention to something I didn't know about, which is that the target of this volunteer program was to get 100,000 youth volunteers. Each volunteer was going to get like $1,000 to $5,000 for their volunteering. I don't know if it's volunteering if you get paid, but let's park that for now. Mm-hmm. Let's say that they got 100,000 volunteers very quickly as they intended to. And let's say that every one of those volunteers got the full $5,000, which certainly they would not max out, but let's say they did. That would only account for $500 million of the $912 million contract.
Yeah.
Who gets the rest?
There is no way to do the math that adds up to all the money being used. And that's a problem. What I still don't get is, I believe that at some point, the work agreement, essentially the contract between the federal government and We, never consummated, will come to light.
Yeah.
And it will have embarrassing details. For the life of me, I don't understand why the federal government doesn't make it public right now. Right? Because the day it comes out, it'll be worse.
I guess that's true. But like, let's think about how much worse, because, you know, it's interesting how figures enter into the media, you know, narrative, and we have kind of like settled science. Like, these are the basics of this scandal or this controversy. We was going to get $19.5 million. That's been repeated ad nauseum. Sometimes people say no less than $19.5 million. But essentially, in everyone's mind, We is getting $19.5 million had this gone through. In fact, I was reminded that $19.5 million was what We would get if they signed up 20,000 volunteers. I can do some basic algebra, and what I suspect we're going to find when we see that full deal is that the more volunteers We signed up, the more they got paid, and that suggests almost $100 million of possible benefit for this charity in this contract.
Yeah, I
carry the three.
I'm not doing the math. I'm doing the sort of political math. At what point did this look like a good idea, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, in the prime minister's office, in any prime minister's office from now to the end of time, there should be people who are paid to sit there. And if anyone says, come on, this will be so great, they have to start looking for reasons why it won't be great. You know, they need to red team some of this stuff, because clearly their instincts are reliably opposite to what would help them get through the day in a healthy manner, like the Aga Khan vacation. I'm going to go to my grave wondering who thought it would be a great idea to let the prime minister sneak off to a billionaire's secret Ireland, you know, and this too. I mean, and then we'll claim that the bureaucracy told us to do it. This deepens an increasingly aggravated relationship between the public service and the government of Canada And normally you think that liberals and bureaucrats get along like a house on fire, but bureaucrats are starting to notice that every time the government gets in trouble, they blame the bureaucrats. And yet the government doesn't let the bureaucrats do the bureaucratic function of designing up these programs and doing due diligence. And, you know, so what's the point of being a public servant in relation with this government? Because all they're going to do is they're going to give all the fun stuff to their friends, and then they're going to blame you.
You know, but Paul, like, I think that it's no more complicated or even nefarious than it appears. And it was sort of evidenced in Justin Trudeau's apology. It's sort of like with the Aga Khan thing. Like, there's just this conception of like, hey, I'm a good guy. I've got good friends. People like to do good things for me. I'm trying to do good things for the country. You know, my whole family works with them. They do great stuff elsewhere in the world. I do great stuff. I'll give them some money. Like, what's the problem here? Even as he was apologizing, the prime minister was sort of saying, you know, hey, I was just trying to help the kids. And, you know, we were just trying to do it quickly because of this pandemic. And he said, you know, we got very creative.
I got into politics to help people shape their country for the better. I've been youth critic and youth minister for our government. And every step of the way, I've tried to create opportunities for young people to serve. During this unprecedented pandemic, we got very creative with a range of programs designed to help Canadians, to help families, to help businesses, and yes, to help young people.
Which is my favorite thing to say, like, while you're apologizing. Like, I am sorry, you know, I'm sorry I'm so creative. You know, I'm sorry that when I'm trying to help the kids, I'm so creative at it. I guess I'll follow your red tape in the future. And what I want to ask you is, I think he would walk away if it holds up that all of this was in service of a charity doing charitable things that's on the up and up. Kate Bain is the managing director of Charity Intelligence, and the CBC had her on The Current the other morning. Mm-hmm. And she's taken a close look at WE's financials. And I've spoken to her since. There was a period where they were actually losing points with Charity Intelligence because they were not sharing their financials. They had a good rating in terms of their transparency, and then that rating suffered because they were just like not coughing up some of their financials. And then she got a look, and her team got a look at the financials. And what she found was what she called backwash. And she said it was backwash, she told me, of a magnitude they hadn't seen before. And the way that she describes backwash, this is when, you know, their for-profit company is supposed to be paying the charity and making money for the charity, but it went the other way.
What we know about Me to We is that it does an awful lot of business with We Charity. And Me to We's business says that since it was founded, it has given $20 million in support to We Charity. Now, what is less well known is how much money We Charity gives to Me to We. Over the last 10 years, We Charity has given and paid Me to We $11 million. And in the last 2 years, 2018 and 2019, 7% and 8% of We Charity's total revenues have flowed to Me to We, the private business of the Kilbergers.
Paul, we are tugging at this thread as well. So Victor Lee is the chief financial officer of We Charity. He also happens to be the chief financial officer of Me to We, their for-profit business, and the equivalent in the U.S. There's an issue there that Charity Intelligence has seized upon that you should not have the same person doing all of those things. There's another issue that Canada Land discovered, because on his profile page on We Charity's website, there's a Q&A by way of introduction where they ask him, what qualifications do you have to manage the finances of a global organization? And he answers, I am professionally certified in accounting in four different countries, Canada, the US, UK, and China. So we checked to see if that's true, and we could find no evidence that he is certified in the United States, no evidence of him being certified in the UK. There are public databases of certified accountants in both of those countries. He's not on them. We are not as confident of our research abilities on the Chinese database, but you know what? We just put it all to the We organization in a question. We can't find this guy's credentials, his certifications in the US, the UK, or China. Can you just link us to his certification? And they couldn't. You know, they gave us a response that, okay, well, he's qualified anyhow. He's qualified to be the CFO for the following reasons, but they did not provide the documentation that you'd think they would have. My question to you, Paul, is if this controversy, call it a scandal, deepens and it turns out that what Justin Trudeau was apologizing for is not simply a conflict of interest with a charity that was doing wonderful charity things, but a charity that has bigger problems than that, Does that change the calculus for Justin Trudeau?
I think I'm supposed to say yes. I'm not sure it does, because to some extent, he's already taken the hit, right? Like, everything they've already done seems to me irresponsible public administration at best. And he's already come out and said, I'm sorry. And so Canadians divide into the habitual camps. There's the people who are inclined to defend this prime minister and say, well, what do you want? He's sorry. He was trying to do good. You know, all of your carping has just ruined the summer jobs of 37,000 volunteers. And then the rest of us say, man, it's weird that this prime minister keeps coming up with, you know, Baroque reasons to get into trouble. You know, given this much, at least Trudeau's scandals or controversies or whatever are fun. Like, it's not like a real estate deal, blah, blah, you know? Yeah. It's they're building a secret second mansion at Harrington Lake, you know? I mean,
like, it was all going his way. He was like this, like, golden retriever released into this big green meadow of beautiful poles. Everyone thought he was doing a great job. And you're like, go run wild, little doggy. There is in the corner, like, a pile of shit, but just run anywhere else. And then the dog just beelines for the poop, and then just comes back like, yeah, I've rolled around in it. What am I going to do? And everyone just says, ah, you silly doggy. And
but I'll tell you, if you ask 100 people what the original sin of the Trudeau government is, you're going to get 100 answers. Mine is they constantly congratulate themselves for being open and transparent, and they are just not ever open and transparent. A question to this government does not ever get a simple prompt answer. Not right. Ever. Not once. Right? And these guys, they can't begin to comprehend that that is the root of all of their difficulties. It's, you know, the SNC stuff. If we were having these meetings with retired Supreme Court justices and fancy lobbyists and stuff on the grass in front of the House of Commons with cameras present, right? Would people think it was a little hinky? Then maybe let's not do it. Right? If it is so important, if it's crucial to our marketing exercise to claim that this was an open and transparent process, and it was not an open and transparent process, then maybe that's a problem, right? And this doesn't, I'm obviously a little overcome with grief at all of this. The thought that this is a problem does not ever occur to them. And when you tell them it's a problem, they wonder what you're talking about, right?
Well, they need that guy in the room, they need that person. They need that salty ex-journalist who just spoils the party and says, wait a minute. You know, they need a Paul Wells, you know, if you're ever thinking about a second career.
As long as they take care to pay me through my social enterprise, then it'll be fine.
But which of Paul Wells' entities is... listen, you've got a pretty common reporter's complaint about this government, the lack of transparency. I've shared that. I have a different complaint. It's not about the government. It's about, like, you know, you mentioned the different camps, that the pro-Trudeau camps, nothing is going to faze them, and they're feeling shaky, and they're feeling threatened, and they don't like this idea that their guy's taking the heat. And so I am now beset by, like, liberal-supporting Twitter trolls. And I am now dealing with people on the internet. Some look like real humans, some not. You know, I'm used to the other side. Now I'm getting, you know, people for, like, I guess, like, capital L liberal Twitter is sure that Canada Land is just gunning for Justin Trudeau. And I couldn't care less what the outcome of this is. Like, really and truly, it's just as a news story to me. But they're convinced that I have it in for this guy. And I have a message to the Liberal Party Twitter advocates and trolls. You're nowhere near as good at this as the right wing. Like, with the memes, with the conspiracy theories, with the abuse, you can't touch me. I'm battle hardened by this. Like, Paul, the conspiracy theories are either that Canada Land is a radical right wing rag, which is funny, or that I personally have some beef with Craig Kilberger because I read this one that he got a speaking gig that I wanted. That was an interesting, you know, they got to find, you know, and I just want to say, like, I feel your pain. I know that you are concerned about the outcome of this, but do people not know me by now? Like, if you don't know me by now, if you thought that I had receipts in hand that somehow incriminated or didn't look good for Elizabeth May or Jagmeet Singh or Andrew Scheer, don't you think I would use those ones too? I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I have my preferences in terms of the policies and ideas of some of those people and others. I might even have preferences as to, like, I might like one of those politicians more than the others. But Paul, please believe me, I like myself more. I like me more. And you know, me one story. I'm going to run the story. It doesn't matter. I'm going to run the story. Paul, on this program of ours, we don't like to lose sight of the little things that should be bigger things. And so we have duly noted. Why don't I start with the ongoing saga of the last great city newspaper, the Toronto Star, which, you know, we heard that this NordStar company was going to purchase them. And then I had people within the Star saying, everyone's reporting that. Don't be so sure. You know, that hasn't passed all the goals that it has to pass. And it might be that somebody else comes forward. And in fact, somebody else came forward. And the Sorbaras, a wealthy Liberal Party family, they put in a bid. But it seems that all that did was drive up the price of Torstar marginally. And NordStar Capital LP, with its conservative backing frontmen, that is the new owner, the soon-to-be owners of Torstar, with a $60 million bid. For a company that I think I've been saying that it was worth $1 billion. I think it might have been at its total height closer to two, sold for $60 million.
Yeah, it's the sad decline of a great media company. Mostly it's just been following the same trajectory as the media industry in general. A little bit the Star has been hobbled by its sense of itself as a great media company, which has made it sluggish to adapt over the years. Like, it's good to see a bidding war. The scale of the bidding war is kind of small potatoes, you know, but every couple million dollars that goes into that organization, maybe if a percentage of it goes into the newsroom,
yeah,
that'll be a good thing. Obviously, the big question is always, will the Atkinson principles, which position the Star as a progressive left of center organization, will they be perpetuated or betrayed? And that's been an eternal question with the Star through a couple of management changes and now more than a decade of speculation that at some point it's going to get rolled into Post Media and merged with the National Post, which would be like a matter-antimatter explosion of huge proportions. My preference is that the Star remain the Star, but it's not immune to the forces that the whole news industry is facing. And my hunch is that if people buying the Star are going to want it to remain the kind of paper that they grew up with. But the National Post rumor has been around for almost as long as there's been a National Post. Duly noted.
Paul, what do you have?
My duly noted is, of course, We Adjacent. I was enjoying reading Andrew Coyne's latest column, which puts the sticks to the Prime Minister on this matter. And right in the middle of it, there's a sentence, the Globe and Mail is a We Charity media partner. And then it goes back to the Coyne call. Mm-hmm. And this obligatory disclosure notice has been popping up in all Globe coverage of We. And my problem is that these things are called disclosure notices in the business. The idea is that if you've got some business association that might color your coverage, you should let people know. But a disclosure notice is useless if it gives you no information that an ordinary person would comprehend. What is a We Charity media partner? What obligations does that impose on the Globe? Does it pay We? Does We pay the Globe? Can that agreement be rescinded? Why has it not been rescinded, given that We won't answer Globe reporters' questions? And this goes beyond this narrow case. Every time an organization, a news organization, is for whatever reason required to give information to its readers, it should do so in a way that makes it possible to understand what the hell you mean. So the Globe insults its quality as a news organization when it puts that sentence in ways that no reader can comprehend.
That's a good point. And if people want to actually find out what that means, the partnership between the Globe and Mail and we did a exhaustively investigated and reported story about the Kielbergers' relationship with the press. You could find that on Canada Land's website. But I'll say this for the Globe and Mail. I agree that that's insufficient disclosure. At least it's disclosure. I don't believe that Post Media, in its coverage of this, has been disclosing that the Kielbergers are columnists for Post Media. I don't believe that the CBC, in their coverage of this, have been disclosing things like that they've worked with the Kielbergers on various projects through the years. Craig Kielberger was on Canada Reads. There's an extensive relationship there as well. At least the Globe says something, but duly noted. One last thing, Paul, to duly note from me. People are tired of the 24/7 cable news TV channel CP24. When a black person is a victim of gun violence, we get a picture of the victim via their mugshot, if they happen to have one. And that is something that Mira Miller of Blog.to has pointed out. People are sick of this because there is just such a unsubtle message to that, which is that the victim is a criminal and this isn't somebody who we value. It's not somebody you need to worry about. And it's, I think, a media practice that very specifically is suffered by black Canadians and not other people so much.
That's an excellent point. It's shameful behavior on the part of the news organization, and it's duly noted.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand.
Under investigation for rape and sex trafficking, Canadian multimillionaire Peter Nygaard is leaving his company following an FBI raid at his Manhattan headquarters.
The number of women accusing Canadian fashion mogul Peter Nygaard of rape and sexual assault has grown.
Dozens of women from Canada, the U.S., and the Bahamas have now come forward to accuse Peter Nygaard of sexual assault, including rape. Most of the allegations are from recent years. But the Fifth Estate has also uncovered cases that are decades old, including what you're about to hear from this woman.
Paul, I will confess that sometimes a big news story breaks and there's just so much going on and it's such a big story that I just say, like, I'm going to sit this out and loop back later. And I don't know about you, but such was the Peter Nygaard expose. Were you following along as this came out?
I was not. I'm glad to catch up to it. It's an extraordinary story.
It really is. And, you know, it's one of those ones that there were so many similar stories happening that I think that the version of this that kind of landed biggest was the New York Times this past February when they wrote it up. But I'm going to go back further than that because we're learning about the origins of this. And I'm going to kind of tell an encapsulated version of this through the media coverage of it. Like, what is the first chance that people had to know that something was up with this Peter Nygaard guy, this garment industry millionaire out of Winnipeg? And that might have been 1996 in Winnipeg, when the Winnipeg Free Press, their reporter Catherine Mitchell, she reported the fact that his company Nygaard paid about $20,000 to settle 3 sexual harassment complaints. And this had to do with things like frequently grabbing himself and calling female employees into his office in a state of undress. So he sounds like a pig in this story. And then Catherine Mitchell gets a flood of tips in response. And one was from a woman in Denmark named Jonna Larsen. And Larsen sent Catherine Mitchell a detailed written account that Mitchell found completely credible, in which she details her employment as a Nygaard employee and in which she documents her alleged rape by Peter Nygaard. And Catherine Mitchell, way back in 96, prepares a blockbuster expose of Peter Nygaard, and then her publisher gets a bunch of phone calls. And this has just come to light, that the story was spiked when the Winnipeg Free Press's Rudy Redekop got this pressure, and he described this to the Fifth Estate. He said, there was a lot of external pressure from high-positioned Winnipeggers or business people that he refers to as Nygaard's compatriots and Winnipeg's kingpins. So Winnipeg's kingpins essentially succeeded in spiking the story out of their fealty to Peter Nygaard. They thought that the Winnipeg Free Press was on a witch hunt. And Redekop says that we decided to kill it, thought that maybe it was a sensationalist story that would be bad for Winnipeg. He says, that was the decision made at the time. We just have to live with it. That allowed Nygaard to continue whatever it is he was doing. And it wasn't until 2010 that CBC's Fifth Estate had their own report on his sexual misconduct. And Nygaard goes and sues the Fifth Estate for criminal libel. This is possible in Canada. It's very rare. But you can go to jail in Canada for journalism. And this, I believe, is still dragging through the courts. And the publication ban on that 2010 episode of the Fifth Estate is still in place. You can't find this report. So that was an occasion where people might have found out about Nygaard and maybe he would have gotten shut down. So then it's not until this past February that the next major story about Nygaard finally comes out, when the New York Times has this bombshell account. And this will sound very familiar to people following the Jeffrey Epstein case. This guy had his own tropical, like, kind of resort in the Bahamas. He would lure children there. He had people, agents, out procuring teenage girls locally. He said, you know, some of these poor local girls are pretty too. Bring them by. There are numerous rape allegations. There's a very complicated story as to how this came to light, because he got into this feud with his hedge fund neighbor. And really, the origin of this is, like, the neighbor was mad that Peter Nygaard was illegally harvesting sand to rebuild his beach. And in his efforts to take down Nygaard, he was, like, paying some of the accusers, which put a stink on the whole thing. Like, maybe the whole thing is made up, but this is not the case. And now the Fifth Estate is back, finally reporting the allegations of Jonna Larson 40 years ago. And to me, there's probably going to be movies and docuseries and all sorts of things about the Nygaard case. But to my sensibility, this is a case of journalism thwarted. This is a case of power and the courts being leveraged against the truth. And there are victims because of that.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily kind of clear case of all of those. Every newsroom has cases where a story gets reported up, it's presented to, you know, the editorial leadership, and the organization decides not to go with it. And, you know, it's possible to ask questions about whether pressure was brought to bear or whether they were intimidated, too worried about the consequences, and so on. This is an unusual case where the former publisher himself says, yep, that's what happened.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? Like, to actually hear the publisher say, oh yeah, there is a powerful elite in Winnipeg. I mean, I'm my dad's a Winnipeg guy. I'm sure Winnipeg people are tough. I'm sure the pressure was bad. But the idea that the kingpins of Winnipeg, but the admission of it was kind of amazing to me.
And the effect of it is exactly the reason why you don't want to let those pressures win, which is that the guy was apparently able to continue and to expand these, you know, hideous, terrible activities unchecked, because they decided not to check him. And I just, you know, maybe younger listeners will think that this would not normally have been considered a legitimate story in 1996. 1996 is not that long ago. Mm-hmm. These claims would have been blockbusters, would have been career enders, would have rocked this guy's life and Winnipeg community in 1996 as today. And I can think of no legitimate reason why the publisher blocked publication of that story. If they decided it was up to journalistic standards, if they decided that it was that would hold up against scrutiny, then they absolutely should have run it. And I believe everyone in the newsroom would have considered that they should have run it in 1996.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And Of course, first thoughts are to all of these people, these victims of Peter Nygaard. There's a class action suit from 57 women, people who have waited decades for justice. Of course, first thoughts have to go with them and how every institution failed them, including journalism. But I also, I can't help but identify with Catherine Mitchell and Bob McEwen, Catherine Mitchell of the Winnipeg Free Press and Bob McEwen of CBC, because it wears you down. I mean, Bob McEwen, like, facing criminal life, like, you know, he's going to go to jail for reporting truths for the CBC. He's a public broadcaster. Catherine Mitchell trying to tell this woman's story, the amount of stress that was put down on them, you know, their own publisher saying this is a sensationalistic story, I'm not going to publish it. And then, you know, it's burdensome to carry people's secrets and to feel so impotent that you were not able to do the thing you're supposed to do, which is tell the world and raise those voices. I hope that they're getting some satisfaction out of this all coming to light now.
Yeah, me too.
Paul Wells, that's Shortcuts for today.
I had fun.
I always have fun when you come on. People, it's never been easier to support the work that we do here to instantly get a golden premium Canada Land feed. You just click on the link in your show notes or go to canadalandshow.com/join, and it costs you $5 Canadian a month. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand. Paul Wells, where can people find you?
In McLean's.
Check them out in McLean's. Our website is canadalandshow.com, where you can listen to the most recent Oppo, which is all about the policy and political implications for women who are being ignored, mothers especially, as we try to deal with the pandemic and accommodations are not being made for them, and it is going to have a major impact. You can also read our coverage of We Charity, including our recent story on their accounting department and their CFO and his missing credentials. This episode is produced by David Crosby. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. And please support Canada Land.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.